Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Transportation unions honoring frontline workers, the jobless numbers, where we are with manufacturing. And today on the show, the Ohio AFL-CIO and the American Society of Civil Engineers. Welcome to the Tuesday, September 7th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. And Tim Berga, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, is going to be our first guest on the show today, the day after Labor Day. We'll touch on Labor Day. Got some new polling out on how people feel about unions, and the trend continues to go up. It's quite fascinating what's going on in America today. All good news, and hopefully our senators will get the message and make sure more people have the opportunity to join unions with passage of the Rich Trumka Protect the Right to Organize Act. And we'll talk about the passing of Rich and the passing of the baton to Liz Shuler, get his thoughts on that. Infrastructure, that is slowly moving in Congress. And from what I have been gathering, we might see something by the end of this month. As you know, the bipartisan plan passed in the Senate, went back to the House so they can work their magic, and then they put the two together and see what they come up with. Then you have the reconciliation bill. And if you have an opportunity, there's a lot of information on the internet on how the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act will deliver to various states. And Ohio, for one, Tim, being president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, has been going around the state talking to local mayors how important this is going to be to their community. So we'll touch on all of that. And redistricting, that's a big issue in the state of Ohio. This all has to do with the gerrymandered districts. And a good example, Ohio is probably about 55, 56% conservative, Republican, maybe 45% Democrat. But the districts are like 75 to 25 because they carve out certain areas where we always say politicians choose the voters instead of voters choosing their politicians. Well, at the ballot box in the past couple of years, there was a referendum to change all that. And apparently they had a meeting, well, they were supposed to meet last week, and they failed to do that. So Tim's going to get into that as well. Emily Feenstra will be joining us later in the show. Emily, she's been on before. She's the Managing Director of Government Relations and Infrastructure Initiatives for the American Society of Civil Engineers, which represents more than 150,000 civil engineers around the world and is America's oldest national engineering society. She oversees government relations, including federal, state, legislative affairs, regulatory affairs, grassroots, and policy development, in addition to media relations. And prior to her work at the Society, she was the Deputy Director of the U.S. Water Alliance, where she led policy initiatives and strategic partnerships. So she's got a really good grasp of what's needed for our infrastructure. And I want to call attention, we're going to talk about this on the show. Go to the website, asce.org. That's the civil engineers website. And there is a really good piece posted there about how the world changed after 9/11. This Saturday is the 20th anniversary of what happened on that fateful day in New York, and then in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and then the Pentagon. And they talk about how civil engineering changed. And it's a really interesting piece because they talk to various structural engineers all around the country about what they learned from that day. And In some cases, it did and did not change the civil engineering profession. And I'm reading this right from the paper. These experts explained how the lessons learned from that day were incorporated into the design of new buildings, especially tall buildings, as well as the renovations of existing structures. They discussed how the experiences led to new building codes, standards, and other engineering guidance. They also talked about how the attacks resulted in the use of new technologies, new approaches and techniques, and a new focus on certain issues and concerns. Now, you would think, well, maybe it will be the end of tall buildings. Not the case. Not the case. But they changed internally. While the tallest buildings were once almost entirely office buildings made from steel, today the majority of new tall structures, and there are many, are residential or mixed-use buildings framed in either concrete or composite systems. Thus, not only did people around the world end up being unafraid to work in tall buildings after 9/11, the engineers point out they seem quite comfortable living in them. Fascinating stuff. The other part of it is the wildfires. The wildfires have crept out of the wild and into the urban landscape. And this is destroying the underground water systems. And the water systems, that's part of the Infrastructure Act, too, about upgrading that. This is quite fascinating. I'll tell you, the engineers, they really have a handle of what's going on in America. And that is precisely why we're bringing them to the table today. Emily Feenstra. We'll cover all this and more as our second guest on the show. Well, as you know, yesterday was Labor Day, and there's all kind of messages that came out from the AFL-CIO. I mentioned the popularity of unions. This comes from President Liz Shuler. She says it comes as no surprise that public support for unions continues to rise around the country. Union members have delivered for our communities throughout the country as workers have finally been recognized as essential to our economy and society during the pandemic. That's why new research from Gallup, released on Thursday of last week, puts our approval rating at 68%, highest mark since 1965. The polling data should send a clear message to Congress that union jobs are vital as we reemerge from this pandemic with a stronger economy that is built upon the principles of fairness and equality. The writing is on the wall, and it's time for Congress to respond to public opinion and the will of their constituents by passing the PRO Act. And last week, the United States Conference of Mayors voted in support of the PRO Act. And this is what Liz Shuler said. The resolution also sends a clear message to Congress. The PRO Act and the Public Service Freedom to Negotiate Act have widespread national support and must become the law of the land. Building Back Better starts with enacting the PRO Act's common sense workplace safety protections, expanding collective bargaining, ensuring gender and racial equality on the job, and enhancing penalties for employers who violate our rights. I applaud the Mayor's Conference for its steadfast commitment to giving working families a chance to level the playing field in our economy. And boy, does it need some leveling. My gosh. The Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO sent out a Labor Day message over the weekend. And this is an organization. We feature them every month. There are 33 unions dealing with anything that moves. Anything that moves. And if you go to ttd.org, they have a pretty good video there. And it all recognizes and thanks the frontline transportation workers for their service and sacrifice, and reminds Americans that these workers are essential always. That's the hashtag. Essential always. And if you go there, you can also see the video. The campaign comes at a historic crossroads for this dedicated workforce as the United States continues to grapple with the devastating effects of the pandemic, which millions of frontline transportation workers have disproportionately shouldered. Congress and the Biden administration are pursuing transformative investments in our infrastructure as part of the president's Build Back Better agenda. Highly skilled transportation workers will be vital in achieving these goals and rebuilding our country. Greg Regan, who's the president of the TTD, said frontline transportation workers power the most advanced economy in the world by operating, maintaining, and building the most complex transportation network on earth. Whether they're helping people get to home, work, or school, moving the goods and raw materials we rely on, delivering our mail, seeing us through a crisis, or building transportation projects of the future, these dedicated professionals have always been essential to the fabric of America, and they always will be. A great example of that, I'm sure you've seen the video of what Hurricane Ida did to the East Coast, primarily New Jersey and New York City, where the subways were flooded. I saw a video of a bus driver driving the bus with about 2 feet of water in it. Yeah, with people on board. That's our frontline workers. That's our heroes right there. Check that out. You can go to ttd.org or Essential Always. Hashtag is Essential Always. Job numbers. Job creation for August was a huge disappointment. The economy adding just 235,000 positions. They expected 720,000 new hires. A little bit off on that one, don't you think? Now, the unemployment rate dropped to 5.2% from 5.4%. So, less jobs created, but the jobless numbers went down. Here's the breakdown. Leisure and hospitality, which had been the primary driver of overall gains at 350,000 per month, stalled. And a lot of that, it's all the pandemic when you take a look at it. Professional business services led with 74,000 new positions. Other gainers included transportation and warehousing, 53,000, private education, 40,000. Manufacturing gained 37,000 jobs in August. Gains were mostly seen in motor vehicles and parts, which added 24,000 jobs. However, manufacturing still remains down 378,000 jobs since the start of the pandemic. We're going to February of 2020. Scott Paul, who heads the American Alliance for American Manufacturing, he said, we can accelerate factory jobs momentum by getting robust infrastructure investment across the finish line and taking steps to reshore critical supply chains for semiconductors, clean energy, and national security goods. While the manufacturing sector still hasn't recovered all the jobs it lost during the pandemic-induced recession, I'm optimistic that we can do that. We got to get him back on the show. Scott Paul heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing. All right, we have to break. When we come back, Tim Berger and the Ohio AFL-CIO.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, celebrating 50 years. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, Mr. Timothy Berga, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, ohioaflcio.org. Lots to talk about this day after Labor Day. And I hope you checked out our show yesterday. We had Marty Walsh, our labor secretary, followed by Terry O'Sullivan, general president of Labor's International. And that's the union that Marty started in Boston when he was like 20 years old, Local 223. And it's such a great story. I mean, he starts out as a laborer, and now he's working next to Joe Biden as a labor secretary. Talk about the American dream. Doesn't get any better than that. All right. Tim Berga, welcome back to the show. Happy post-Labor Day. How are we doing, my brother?
We're doing great, Flash. Thank you so much. And, yeah, Secretary Walsh is putting labor back in the Labor Department. good stuff.
Comes at a great time, I'll tell you. Oh, my gosh, especially after 4 years under the Trump administration. My God. And the clock just went backwards during that time. So it's good to have the right people in the right places. No doubt about that. So I would imagine you had a busy day yesterday. Maybe you could give us a little synopsis of what happened in the state of Ohio.
Well, we had a dozen Labor Day events around the state, Saturday, Sunday, and yesterday, Labor Day. I was in Mansfield for the Mid-Ohio Labor Council Labor Day events, the parade there. Shout out to President Norm Shoemaker, the steelworkers. And they had a nice parade and a picnic there at the carousel in Mansfield afterwards. My partner officer, Melissa Cropper, was at Marietta for their festivities there. And then she was at the Newark Labor Day activities yesterday. So all around the state, things were happening. Barberton, Marietta, Cleveland, Toledo, all over the state, labor was having its day. And I want to thank the Central Labor Councils of the AFL-CIO for hosting and supporting those many events.
And I'll tell you, Tim, it's just good to see how people feel about unions in America today. And I'm reflecting on the polling by Gallup, the new research showing union approval rating. The union approval ratings today at 68%, the highest since 1965. Just wondering here, what do you attribute that to? Any thoughts on that?
Well, you're right. It's the best numbers we've seen since 1965. Workers are at I feel that this is a transformative period here. People are taking stock in their lives. They're taking stock in their work. People want to work. There's no doubt about it. They're tired of working under the conditions they're working in. They're tired of working for poverty wages. And they know that unions are the one organization that you can come together collectively and bargain for a better work life. So whether it's safety on the job, whether it's wages and compensation, whether it's health care, whether it's time off with your family, working people are recognizing what we've known all along, that there's strength in togetherness and solidarity and unity. And the numbers are really reflective of that. Mm-hmm. So it's the laws now have to catch up with where the people are at. And that's why we've been pressing so hard for the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. And we've talked about it so many times on this show to get that done.
Liz Shuler took that opportunity over the weekend using the polling numbers and saying it's time to pass this. And by the way, it's now called the Rich Trumka Protect the Right to Organize Act. And that being said, Tim, the last time you and I talked, it was a couple of days before his sudden passing. I'd like to get a few comments from you. I know you knew Rich very, very well. He came to the state of Ohio many, many times. A coal miner. So he had such a rich history, and he was such a powerful leader. And we've got a transformation here going to Liz Shuler. Your thoughts on what happened here in the past month?
Well, President Trump came out of my grandfather's union, United Mine Workers, and there wasn't a better trade unionist in America than Rich Trumka, or a better person and friend. And he was so generous, and he gave so much to our efforts and our movement here in Ohio. And we lost a great one. We lost a legend. So we're going to honor his legacy now by delivering on the work that he begun for the last 40 years trying to transform labor law in America. We're on the doorstep of that. We're going to finalize the bipartisan infrastructure bill. We're going to get the American Jobs Plan finished, the American Families Plan finished, and the Protecting the Right to Organize finished. The Rich Trumka Protecting the Right to Organize Act, as you rightly stated. And we're going to get those things across the finish line and honor the legacy of Rich Trumka, and workers in this country will be better off for it.
How do you feel about Liz Shuler? She comes from the trades. She worked many years with the IBEW. Your thoughts on her becoming president?
President Shuler, I mean, fortunately, Secretary Shuler, as was Secretary Treasurer under Rich Trumka, she knows the administrative, the fiduciary responsibilities of the organization, and she also knows the political and the policy ramifications of what's happening in America. And she's really, we're really in great hands with Liz. So President Shuler, we're behind her all the way here in Ohio. She knows that, and we're going to do everything we can to help her win for working people in this country.
All right, Tim. Big topic I know you want to talk about. It's getting a lot of play in the state of Ohio, and it deals with redistricting. Last week, apparently, they were supposed to come together, and I guess the parties involved did not do that. Why don't you just start from the beginning here, what this is all about? And, I mean, it deals with gerrymandered districts, I know that, but maybe you can just reference what the voters tried to change here in the state of Ohio.
Yes, if you remember, we were on your program on two different occasions passing constitutional amendments to change the way in which our state legislative maps are drawn and our congressional maps are drawn. Overwhelmingly, all 88 counties supported these constitutional amendments so we could end gerrymandering, the practice of politicizing the party in power during the census year, politicizing for their own political control the maps that govern how we hold our elections what the districts look like for 10 years. So this last 10 years has been an abject disaster with Republicans drawing the maps 10 years ago, and they've created these gerrymandered, politically rigged districts that don't reflect Ohio at all. So what do you get with that, Flash? You get these extreme legislators and not in touch with Ohio's values and certainly not working people. You get things like Senate Bill 5, where they try to take away collective bargaining rights. You get attacks on prevailing wage law. You get the introduction of right to work and trying to take away the ability for unions to collect dues. And then you get extremists that don't even want to understand or believe in medical science. And that's made dealing with this COVID pandemic all the much harder. We've got an opportunity now to end this process. It shouldn't benefit the Democrats. It shouldn't benefit the Republicans. It should be based on what does Ohio look like and draw the maps based on that. And that's where we're at. And the next deadline, it looks like, is September 15. There were 10 field hearings around the state the last couple weeks. Ohioans turned out in force to say, end this gerrymandering, end the process of rigging these districts. So they're in the process now, this redistricting commission, of putting together maps, having a couple of hearings, and then going forward with it. The maps have to have bipartisan support. If not, They go into place for 4 years instead of 10 years. But nobody wants that. We want, let's do the right thing. Let's do what voters said. Let's get state legislative and congressional district maps done the right way without slicing and dicing cities and townships and counties all over the place. Mm-hmm. All you have to do, Flash, is look at the maps and you know there's something wrong here. So we're hopeful that the right thing will happen, and we'll certainly push back if not.
Like I said earlier in the show, voters are supposed to choose their leaders, their politicians, not the other way around. And that's essentially what's happened. One question here, Tim. The redistricting commission, the makeup of that commission, how do you feel about that? Are you comfortable with the makeup going forward?
Well, it's the party in power has the majority seats on there, so it's a seven-person commission. There are five Republicans and two Democrats. These maps have to have the two Democrats or the minority party support in order to go forward for the next 10 years. And that's what the voters of Ohio said. They want to make sure that there's bipartisan support, regardless if it's Republican or Democrat. They just want fair maps.
Yeah.
And when we have fair maps, Flash, working people's issues are Main Street issues, and they don't get messed with, right? We actually can advance things like fair pay and fair wages and rights for workers to collectively bargain to move forward in a way that helps all Ohioans, not just the super wealthy and big businesses. And we've got to move away from all this extremism that's happening where the primary election is the main election. It used to be the other way around. The general election used to be the main election. Mm-hmm. But right now, these maps are so stacked up that the primary easily determines the outcome. That's not good for democracy, and that hasn't been good for policy here in the state.
The bottom line, you got to fight to be fair. I mean, that's the gist of this conversation. You got to fight to be fair. All right, I'm going to leave it on that note. Tim, always a pleasure having you on. Tim Berger, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. You can find more at ohioaflcio.org. Lots to cover, more to cover in the months ahead. You take care, stay safe, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Emily Feenstra is with the American Society of Civil Engineers. We're going to talk infrastructure and how life has changed, especially in building new buildings since 9/11. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we are available, the show is, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute, sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at www.aft.org. All right, let's go to line number two and welcome to the show Emily Feenstra. She's been on the show before. She is with the American Society of Civil Engineers. She's the Managing Director of Government Relations and Infrastructure Initiatives, which represents more than 150,000 civil engineers around the world. And we should point out, it's America's oldest national engineering society. Emily, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me back. Great to be here.
Well, let's start with the infrastructure bill in Congress and get an update. I'm hearing that, well, it passed in the Senate, went to the House, and they're trying to mend the two together. And I could imagine in your position, and obviously the civil engineers are watching this very, very closely because you're going to have a big role in rebuilding our infrastructure. So let's start there. Talk to me about that part. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, you're right. It did pass the Senate. And just to pause a moment there, I mean, I think the strong vote in the Senate was something to celebrate and really interesting because, you know, we're in this world of such partisan politics and almost this feeling like, you know, America can't govern anymore. And then you see this bipartisan bill get hammered out. And it was a group of 20 to 22 senators on both sides of the aisle. They worked hard for months. They came up with this bill, and it's $550 billion in new spending over 5 years for infrastructure. And it passed, all 50 Democrats and 19 Republicans joining them. So that there, we saw it was a really strong signal. It's got good voter support. I think Americans want their government to work for them. They want these projects to get going. So that Senate vote happened on August 10th. And then we hit August recess, as it's called, where Congress goes back to their districts, you know, visits with their constituents, takes a little breather, and they're coming back shortly to Washington, D.C. And now, really, essentially, the bill is sitting in the House. It's ready to go. There's been a commitment from President Biden and this group of senators to keep the focus on infrastructure. I mean, so we would hope we'd have a clean vote in the House, and Speaker Pelosi is committed to having a vote on this bill by September 27th. So, you know, all of us involved in infrastructure and really everybody, I mean, there's Americans across the country standing to benefit from this bill. We're just hopefully awaiting that vote so that we can get this bill to the president's desk to sign.
Emily, you said something that caught my attention. A clean bill. You know how these, how the process works, because they muddy them up. And I'm just wondering, what are you hearing right now? I mean, what's the scuttlebutt going on right now?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, there's a little bit of confusion, understandably, out there, because at the same time, there's this $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill being negotiated right now in the House. And that's what they're calling more the human infrastructure, the social infrastructure. We as civil engineers don't really have a dog in that fight as much, but that in some conversations is coupled with the infrastructure bill. And so what I mean is the infrastructure bill is there. it has, you know, again, because it was crafted in a bipartisan way, the thought is there wouldn't be a lot of amendments attached to it at this point in the House. It just gets a vote. So All this other reconciliation process is ongoing. The infrastructure bill is essentially ready.
I gotcha. So it's kind of tentative right now. I mean, the needle is moving in the right direction, but you never know until that vote actually takes place. So, Emily, let me ask you about the bipartisan bill. The components in that, and we're hearing broadband, we're hearing new bridges, new roads, water infrastructure. As a member of the Society for Civil Engineers, and you grade the roads and bridges, and you've been doing that for a long time, and right now they're not in good shape. What is it, C minus, D plus, something like that? They kind of waver. Some states are better than others, but the bottom line is there's a lot of work that needs to be done. So, right. The bipartisan bill, let's keep reconciliation out of it. The bipartisan bill, will it get the job done, or is this just a start? What's your opinion?
It is a significant, I would say, down payment. It significantly closes that investment gap. And so you mentioned the grade that the civil engineers come out with every 4 years. You were right. It's not good. It's a C minus. But first time out of the D's in 20 years, you know, but I'm a parent. C minus is not something I would be happy if my kid brought home. We have a lot of work to do. And this bill is really a historic investment in the nation's infrastructure. You are correct that it's really comprehensive. So a lot of bills in the past have focused on roads and bridges, very important needs. We graded bridges a C and roads a D in the 2021 report, but it also goes much further. There's things like drinking water infrastructure, wastewater infrastructure, removing lead pipelines, all of those rusty, leaky pipes that are crisscrossing the country. There would be about $55 billion alone allocated for water infrastructure. And then things like upgrading our energy grid. And I think Hurricane Ida, what that was one of the surprises, the problems in Louisiana was just the failure of the grid there. And rural broadband access as well. So just a number of different things. A focus on resilience, making our infrastructure stronger to those more extreme weather events. It's all in there. It's a pretty comprehensive package.
Yeah, the extreme weather's called attention to our needs. Let's talk about the energy grid, if you don't mind. In Louisiana, sure. For instance, which, I mean, they're always hit with hurricanes. Florida, that whole area. New York, well, I don't think they expected that at all. I mean, that was ridiculous what happened over in New Jersey and New York. Mm-hmm. And that was just the remnants of Hurricane Ida. So are we talking about putting, like, utility lines underground? Is that how things should change, especially in those vulnerable areas? As an engineer, what's your response to that?
Sure. And I think, you know, there's a number of lessons learned that they're unpacking right now, especially in the Northeast. But just pointing to Louisiana for a second, you know, one of the things to celebrate, perhaps, is the levee system. So the Army Corps installed that $14 billion levee. The levee system withheld Hurricane Ida. So that was good news. What wasn't as good news, again, are those transmission lines that failed, the grid that failed there. So they're looking into, you know, doing better inspections of transmission lines, for example, and making sure there's not one that's vulnerable to failure. I think in the Northeast, there's a lot of conversation happening, a lot of, you know, what we call forensic engineering, where they're looking at the tragic events that occurred and what can we do better. Certainly some talk about undergrounding utility lines. How do we keep our transit systems running? How do we deal with all of the stormwater? Because the urban flooding that we saw was just unprecedented.
Emily, I want to drive our listeners to another website here. And you and I talked about this last time you were on, infrastructurereportcard.org. Real simple, infrastructurereportcard.org. Why don't you explain it? Isn't that pretty much a state-by-state rundown of what's happening or what's needed in the United States when it comes to fixing our roads, bridges, water infrastructure, and all that?
Sure, and thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, that's our website where you can find our national report card, which we talked about is that dreaded C-. But then, you know, the next thing people want to see once they see the national grade is what's it like in my state and how do we compare? And we certainly have all of that information. So you can click on the map, drill down to your state, and if we have a state report card for that state, it will show up. We have grades for most of the states. They're done by our civil engineer volunteers. And then we also have key facts by state, so you can kind of compare and contrast again. Not quite a ranking, but, you know, you can see how many structurally deficient bridges there are in your state. What's the estimated backlog of projects for drinking water? Those sorts of things. We even have hazardous waste and solid waste and a section on broadband this time in the report card. So lots of good information there, ways you can take action, ways you can find your member of Congress, tell them that you want these projects to get done and you want this bill to get passed. A host of information on that site.
Now, Emily, has your organization Association, the American Society for Civil Engineers. Have you been very vigilant with members of Congress on this, saying, hey, come on, now's the time to do this. It's long overdue. I'm just wondering, because you are a policy expert on all this. Explain that part to me.
Sure. I mean, we created the report card back in 1998. If you can believe it, it's been over 20 years we've been doing it. To kind of take what had been an out-of-sight, out-of-mind problem, you know, the pipes below your feet, the bridges that you cross over, you don't think about them much until there is a disaster. So we did that to raise awareness for this investment needed in the nation's infrastructure. We've kind of taken a generation off, really, in investing in it. It's the same thing if you just built a roof on your house and forgot about it for 30 years. It wouldn't be in great shape. So that's kind of where we're at. In terms of investment needs, we created this report card to start the drumbeat going. And I think now with this infrastructure bill on the cusp, you know, we're almost there. And our members, our civil engineers across the country, this is what they do. And it's part of our mission, protecting public health, safety, and welfare. And that's really what it's about. These projects are about safety. Our members go out and talk about what it would mean for their communities if we can get these things going. You know, what kind of new innovations we could use, innovative materials, new designs. There's no reason we should be living with 50 or 100-year-old infrastructure when we've got such advances in place. So they're really kind of storytellers about these types of things.
Yeah, even the water structure. There's a lot of communities. They're dealing with wood pipes still, over 100 years old. They were put in the 1920s. It's really scary. You know, your group, the Society of Civil Engineers, do you take a stand on how it should be paid for? And I bring that up because, like the highway system for years was based on the gas tax, raising the gas tax, and now you're seeing a, you know, switch over to electric vehicles, and now they're talking about a user fee. Are you just telling Congress, get it done, find the money, or you suggest any kind of funding sources on this?
I mean, ultimately, it is up to Congress to decide how to fund it. But we have traditionally supported that kind of user fee approach. And that's another interesting thing we're seeing now is really neither side of the aisle is supporting a gas tax increase. And I think coming out of, you know, economic struggles in the pandemic, you can see a little bit of that. But at the same time, 37 states have raised their own gas taxes to fund infrastructure since 2010. And that's both, you know, traditionally blue and red states. So we think, yes, ultimately it's Congress's job to figure out how to fund it from, you know, the tools in the toolbox. But we have pointed to user fees as being a really efficient way to fund infrastructure. Because, for example, if you raise the gas tax, that could go into effect tomorrow and you could get those funds out to state DOTs.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that many states have done that. That just shows you the need that's out there. All right, Emily, I got to take a quick break. ASCE.org. And the other website you want to check out is infrastructurereportcard.org. Definitely check that one out. Those of you listening, we're nationally podcast. Go to your respective state, click on it, and find out how you are doing. It's real simple. It's all there, infrastructurereportcard.org. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Emily Feenstra on behalf of the American Society for Civil Engineers.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Emily Feenstra. We're talking about our infrastructure. She's with the American Society of Civil Engineers. InfrastructureReportCard.org is a website that you can click on depending on what state you live in, and you can find out how well you are doing. And the whole idea is to get vocal about it and say, hey, you know what? We need more funding for roads, bridges, water systems, our energy grid. Also, ASCE.org is the website for the civil engineers, and there's some really good posting there. Emily, I tell you, I was captivated by all the information that you have posted on your website, and here we are commemorating the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and the one that caught my attention is titled "The Impact: A World Changed," and it talks about how civil engineers looked at what happened on September 11th, 2001. And there's a number of them mentioned in the paper, their comments on what happened, what should have happened, and how things have changed. And apparently, from what I've read, much of the buildings were made of steel. And today, I guess, well, they're mixed use. They're residential. They have some commercial activity. Mixed use, they call them. And I guess they're using more concrete or composite systems. And you would think, too, that tall buildings would, okay, no more tall buildings because of 9/11 and the threat of a terrorist attack. But apparently, they're making even more of them. But they're changing them. Any thoughts on how things have changed as a civil engineer speaking? What's your response to that?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. That was a great piece in our civil engineering magazine. And I think it shows, you know, just again, how much the community, the engineering community, takes stock of these tragedies, you know, tries to disseminate these lessons learned. So still not shying away from tall buildings, but taking a hard look at how we design them, what kind of materials we use to construct them. And it's interesting, you know, within ASCE, just a small slice of what we do is policy in the report card, and much more are kind of these technical journals and publications. And we have institutes like the Structural Engineering Institute and Construction Institute, and they're really all about problem solving and sharing information. So from this tragedy, hopefully, you know, these new buildings are built to stand. And I think all of that information sharing is helpful, beneficial to the community, and it extends beyond the U.S. We've actually got a growing number of global members as well that are taking part.
That's good to hear. Yeah, that's definitely a very interesting read. The other interesting read is about the wildfires, and there's a story posted on the engineering website about the Camp Fire in California. This was in November of 2018. And how it damaged the water systems. I mean, you see the fires above ground, but the water systems underground were damaged as well. It's just, it's a whole different world out there when you take a look at it from an engineering perspective. So it's great that we have you on the show to talk about this. All right. We got a couple of minutes left here. I just want to move forward and try to convince more and more people that listen to this show to activate their members of Congress, and I think we're going in the right direction. And as you indicated in the first segment, this is a down payment. And I recall, I think the engineers said years ago, we need like $4 trillion if you want to do this right. That's a lot of dough. But with with the money that they're talking about right now, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, what kind of jobs are we looking at right now? Does the engineering society have a breakdown on that?
There's been a number of recent industry studies kind of looking at the impact on the construction industry and the engineering industry and estimating, you know, upwards of 6% growth annually. But I think the other thing I don't want people to miss is just the long-term ripple effect. So, yes, it's engineering and construction jobs, but it's really kind of the backbone of America's economy when we invest in infrastructure. And I think we've all seen some of the supply chain issues when the ports get congested or the barge on the inland waterway system has to sit there for 2 days while a lock is repaired. That cost is translated to consumers. It makes shipping less efficient. It makes goods cost more. And it's just kind of a drag on our productivity and our GDP. So I think we're looking at the short-term jobs, absolutely, but also just the long-term economic growth potential from a bill like this, making sure, you know, our America's businesses have the water systems that they need. You mentioned the wildfires. Water is so critical to so many businesses that you wouldn't even think about, including manufacturing. So making sure, you know, we're in good working order, we're modernized, not just making repairs, but modernizing our infrastructure, that's going to have a huge impact on jobs, on economic growth, and our productivity as a country.
Well, one thing is for sure, and I got this from so many guests that have been on this show, if you don't do anything, if you just sit idle, and that's what's been going on since, what did you say, 1998, something like that?
Right.
If you don't do anything, we're all going to pay, right?
Right, yes. $3,300 a year is what we estimate the average American family pays right now, just from kind of this unreliable, gradually deteriorating infrastructure that we have.
$3,300 a year. Now, if I got a bill in the mail for $3,300, I think that would be a wake-up call. And people need to hear that. And that's why it's so important that Congress moves forward on this. Again, we're talking about a down payment here. Much more needs to be done. But the good news is, like I said, it seems to be moving in the right direction. Okay, now you've been involved as a policy expert. You've worked the Hill for a long time now. Government relations is not an easy job. How does Emily Feenstra feel about this moving forward? What's your gut telling you right now?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I think that Senate vote, that strong Senate vote, really put a wind in our sails, and we're really so close. I feel, and I don't think I'm alone, that we're so close to the finish line here getting this bill done. So I feel good about where we are. I do think it's going to take, especially with all of the recent tragic events we've had in our country, it's going to take reminding Congress that this does need to get done, that this is important. You know, let's not end right in front of the finish line here. We do need to get it done. So I feel good. I feel hopeful that this is going to have such a positive impact, and we're almost there.
Almost there. All right. Sounds good to me. All right, Emily, thank you for joining us. Emily Feenstra with the American Society for Civil Engineers. National website is asce.org. InfrastructureReportCard.org is another one you want to get into. And also, you can follow them on Twitter, ASCEGOVREL, like government relations, GOVREL. Emily, great job. Keep the faith. Stay safe. And hopefully next time you and I have a conversation, we'll have a bill in hand and they'll start building and rebuilding America. How's that sound?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Take care. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the new president of the Painters and Allied Trades. That would be Jimmy Williams Jr. and Sean McGarvey, head of the North American Building Trades. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.